Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Tuesday morning. Normally joined on Thursdays at 8 o'clock by our friend Charles Robinson, but it is Thanksgiving week, and Charles kind enough to audible and join us on Tuesday this week. We head to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and say hello to our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, good morning. How are you?
What's going on, gentlemen? I think I'm doing better than Joe. I'm trying to figure out why Joe is broadcasting to us from the Jeffrey Epstein prison cell.
Well, you'll also be happy to know that Rex Road is late to the segment because he demonstrates a total lack of professionalism. But he's back in there now. Late to the segment, and here he is just stumbling back in to the show. Joe, welcome to the program with us.
Oh, hi.
Congratulations to Joe coming into the light. Like, why is Joe on Dave? What is going on?
I'm on assignment, okay? Leave me alone.
Top secret. I can't wait to understand what this top secret assignment has been. We've speculated upon. How you guys doing?
Lots of big stuff.
I'll let you know, every Thanksgiving, for years now, I go back to, I can't even remember what year it was, years and years ago, talking to Sam Darnold with Therese Paylor, and we asked him what his worst Thanksgiving take was, and he called stuffing trash.
Oh, man.
I'm like, I can never look at this guy the same whenever it comes. I figured he'd be irrelevant by now, but somehow Sam Darnold's not irrelevant anymore at this point in his NFL career. But every time Thanksgiving rolls around, I'm like, yeah, Sam Darnold. Ugh. Stuffing trash. Like, I mean, come on, man. It's the worst Thanksgiving take I've ever heard.
It's a bad take, but I will say that some stuffing, I think some people have bad stuffing. Like, they just get mushy stuffing that's not good.
You know what I mean?
So I feel terrible for those people, because if you get good stuffing, it's like you could eat it all day long. Yeah.
Fair point. That is a fair point. Yeah. That's a good point.
Darnold has ripped through the adversity of having bad stuffing as a child.
Well, he ripped through the adversity as well of playing against the Tennessee Titans on Sunday and got a nice victory at Nissan Stadium. Charles, we talked a lot about Cam Ward last week, and we talked about the sacks, and he's on pace for 70. By the way, still on pace for 70. He got sacked four times on Sunday. But I think he played pretty well, like meaningful progress from Cam Ward. So what did you see from Ward in this game? What did you like, and what do you think it all means for Cam Ward taking a pretty good step against Seattle?
Yeah, I mean, we texted about it, you know, when it was unfolding. Like, I was really, really encouraged. Like, I felt, you know, when they hit halftime, I'm like, this is probably one of the best games I think I've seen Cam Ward, you know, play. I mean, I really respect the heck out of the Seattle defense. You know, I've seen them butcher a lot of really, really really good quarterbacks over the course of this season. And, you know, we talked about last week a little bit about Cam Ward starting to access his legs, you know, be a little more active in terms of the mobility aspect. And I think we saw that again against Seattle. It was limited. It's not like he's not turning into like Jaden Daniels or, you know, Lamar Jackson, but I think it hurt Seattle at certain points. And then I just thought, you know, look, he looked decisive. There were a number of throws where I'm like, man, this looks really good. This is as competitive as I've seen him against a defense of this stature over the course of the season. And I texted you guys. I said, I it was late in the game. They were clearly, you know, going to lose. And I said, look, even losing, I love this game for him. He just looks so confident. You know, he looks like he's accessing every part of what he brings to the table for the Tennessee Titans. And, you know, I thought this looks like it's pointed in the right direction. I would show, like, that's a game where I would say, hey, we want you to be our head coach. Look at this. Like, here's what this guy, the ability that he has and the resiliency. And, you know, as you said, I mean, he still took four sacks in that game and still going to finish the season taking, you know, an unbelievable amount of punishment. But the competitiveness, the skill set, all of that I felt like was really on display against the Seahawks. And I hope, just watching that game, I hope this is how we watch him conclude this season, because this is the player that you drafted number one overall. This is what what you thought you were going out and ultimately getting. So tough to take that loss, but I think he earned some respect around the league because I thought, you know, I was scared for him in that game. You know, Seattle's just, it is a team that has really beaten up a lot of really, really good quarterbacks, and given the, you know, the limitations of the Titans at this point in this season and what's happened in terms of, you know, the staff changes and everything, I think that could have been far, far worse than it really was. Instead, I think it felt like it was a really great positive in his favor.
So it looks, Charles, like we possibly may be heading for a little Cam Ward versus Shedeur Sanders showdown coming up here. Shedeur gets the week of prep, gets to play the Raiders, plays pretty well, nothing amazing, but plays pretty well, shows some promise.
Yeah.
Now Stefanski, and I want to ask you a Browns questions any chance I can get, because I know Cleveland radio is just listening with bated breath, but Stefanski kind of changes his tune or, you know, backs off the, you know, Gabriel's the starter no matter if he's healthy. So is Shedeur, is he changing minds in that franchise? Is there something actually, you know, legitimately good going on with him, or is it still smoke and mirrors?
I think it illustrates a meritocracy. It was like, you know, when I talk to someone in their organization, you know, one of the key decision makers, we'll put it that way, going into training camp, and the way they described it to me was really how it's played out. Like, and you know, they thought at that time, it's most likely Joe Flacco ends up being our starting quarterback. We like Dylan Gabriel as the backup eventually, if not coming out of camp and starting the regular season. We think that, you know, there's going to come a point in the season where Dylan Gabriel is going to ascend and get himself the opportunity to start some games. And then when it came to Shedeur, it was, we'll see where it goes. And, you know, if there's a point where Shedeur gets an opportunity and he produces, we're not going to ignore that. And I think that's exactly what ultimately ended up happening. Shedeur got an opportunity. You know, I thought, like you said, Joe, I didn't think it was great. I didn't think it was terrible. I looked at it and I said, okay, I see flashes. I see certain things happening with this offense with Shedeur back there that, you know, whatever. I'm not going to sit here and degrade it by saying, well, it's against the Raiders and, you know, this team is horrific and the defense is clearly carrying this win. There were certain things that happened offensively that I raised an eyebrow. Like Isaiah Bond's a good example. I thought, you know, he threw a you know, 50-plus yard pass on a rollout to Isaiah Bond, but it was the first time since Isaiah Bond's played for the Browns where I was like, okay, they accessed this skill that Isaiah Bond has, which is his deep speed, right? And he's a rookie, and he's a guy that really should factor for the Browns going forward. And this is the first time I've seen something happen where I'm like, oh, yeah, there's that big plus factor in his game that now a quarterback has been able to access. Right? I don't think Dylan Gabriel, look, he played a number of games, Isaiah Bond, and we never saw a 50-plus yard pass on a rollout where Shedeur basically created that on his own. And, you know, there were other plays. I mean, the Jerry Jeudy play where Jerry Jeudy fumbles, but Shedeur, again, on a rollout, you know, creating time, was able to find Jerry Jeudy in space and create an explosive. The Dylan Sampson, the 66-yard touchdown, obviously that was Dylan creating that himself. But Shedeur made the right decision. He did it fast. He got the ball to Dylan Sampson in a situation where he could set up his own blocks, and the timeliness of it, you know, was appropriate. It was just certain aspects with the offense where I was like, okay, it frankly in moments looks better, or it looks different than Dylan Gabriel. And so when the game ended, I thought to myself, like, just turn it over. That's what I wrote. I was like, just turn it over, give it to him. Like you've seen what Dylan Gabriel is. You have to have a complete suite of answers for yourself come this off season, because you have to know, what are we doing at the quarterback position? And now it's become Gabriel versus Sanders, and then Gabriel and Sanders versus every other option you're going to have on the table once the offseason starts, including drafting a quarterback in the first round of the 2026 draft. You can't do that unless you know for sure what Sanders has available to him. And, you know, now I think they're going to take a look at that. Now it's 1 week, you know, Stefanski's been, Gabriel's out of the concussion protocol. He should be returning to the starting lineup. He's not, which means that, you know, Stefanski is leaning back into Shador against the 49ers this week. At the very least, I'm glad we've put to bed this narrative of Stefanski's like in some closet in the facility rubbing his hands together going, I'm going to destroy this guy every single week again. It is a meritocracy. He's merited another start. He's going to get it. And what he produces going forward is going to judge how we ultimately look at Shador. Interestingly enough, if you go back to the schedule release, I said the Titans versus Browns game, I was like, hey, there's a chance that this ends up being, Cam Ward versus Shador Sanders. And this is one of my favorite games on the schedule in 2025, because we could end up looking at these two guys who, at least up until the day of the draft, we thought were measured against each other, and it didn't end up being that way.
What a glorious matchup.
Yes, it's going to be awesome. So, Charles, the AFC North, pretty wonky. You have Pittsburgh. You know, Rodgers couldn't play against Chicago on Sunday. They lose to the Bears. You've got Baltimore that started 1-5, that's now rolled off 5 in a row and is back up at the top of the division at 6-5. And then there's the Bengals, who are 3-8, and there's all this noise about Joe Burrow getting back in there.
Yep.
Should he? They're a 3-8 football team, and the Ravens are surging right now. What do you make of the Joe Burrow conversation about whether or not he should come back and play this year?
You know, it's funny because Andrew Siciliano and I were talking about that yesterday on the podcast. And, I told Andrew this story. I said, you know, hey, earlier in the season when we were kind of debating, like, hey, looks like Joe Burrow might come back. And I was kind of hem and hawing, going back and forth about, you know, maybe, I don't know, man. Like, you weren't going to bring this guy back. He's got his injury of history or history of injury. You know, do you want to risk that on a season that's already lost if it got to this point? And I had an NFL executive hit me up afterward. He had caught that portion of the show, and he was just, I mean, he basically ripped me. And he was like, "Look, man, like, what are you talking about?" He's like, first off, and again, I'm paraphrasing here, but he's like, "Look, if you're the Bengals, you start Burrow when you can. Like, he doesn't have a history of full availability. It's not like he's playing 17 games every single year. So when he can play for you, you play him. You can't just decide, well, we're afraid of breaking him, so we can't play him." He's like, no, you know, you owe it to everybody in the organization. He said, look, there's adults who show up expecting to have gainful employment being an NFL football team. You have assistant coaches who rely on Joe Burrow being the starting quarterback of that team, regardless of what the record is, putting the best product they can on the field and hopefully making them gainfully employed a year from, you know, today. And he said, you know, look, the fans said the same thing for the fans. You owe it to the fans. You owe it to the owners who are paying him tens of millions of dollars every single year. He's like, you can't just decide we're afraid now to trot him out there as the quarterback of a team. And, you know, I thought to myself, I'm like, yeah, you know, that's true. Like, he's a football player, man. He kind of was like, you guys all talk, he's talking about the media. He's like, you guys all talk like it's fantasy football. Like, you know, there's not other consequences on the table. He's like, this is real life. And as an organization, you know, when you're starting quarterback, particularly when he's a player of that level, he's like, you don't ever pull back on that in a situation and go, well, the season's lost, so, you know, let's not play this guy. And it made me think, and I didn't mention Andrew, but I've thought about it since, like, and Robbie, I think you can appreciate this. You think back to when the Lions kind of turned the corner, became a viable franchise when it comes to a Super Bowl picture. I still think it goes all the way back to when they beat the Packers at the end of a season a couple years ago to knock the Packers out of the playoffs and put the Seattle Seahawks in. And the Lions went into the offseason on a note where it was like, hey, we've got it together. Like, we're turning in the right direction. Like, we're, you know, this next offseason is very important. We think that we are now a franchise that's got it turned in the right, you know, we have the momentum moving forward to be a player in the NFC. That's probably good. You know, if you're the Bengals, if you can end the season, even if it's not in the playoffs, if you can end the season on the right note, it gives you something as an organization to look forward, and probably even matters to free agents and guys who could potentially leave. And, you know, look, you might have to replace coaches. You have to bring people in. you don't want to end up, you know, who wants to go to the table to a prospective candidate, whether it's a player or a coach, and go, yeah, well, we finished 4-13 and we kind of held Joe back because we don't want him to get hurt. Like that just, it sounds terrible. Nobody wants to work for that kind of an organization. So I get it, you know, from the Bengals perspective, and that's not even getting into Burrow's own mind, where I'm sure as a player, you're sitting there saying, God, I don't want the organization to hide me, because what does that say to my teammates in the locker room?
Okay, so that last part I'm totally on board with. I agree with the last part. But to me, the argument – well, yeah, because the argument back to this guy is, okay, well, then we'll trot him out and get him hurt, and we will all absolutely not be gainfully employed next year, because we did that when it didn't matter anymore. And I think the comparison to the Lions, it's a tough one for me, because the Lions didn't know what they had, and they were a team ascending. The Bengals have been to the Super Bowl with Joe Burrow, right? So I just, to me, it's like at some point, I think you cut your losses, and you know, you just, it's like, why? The fact is, he is injury prone. The fact is, we do pay him all this money, so we're gonna put him out there because we pay him all this money for meaningless games. I mean, I think there's a strong counter argument to be made, but I think also if he is, and I'm sure he is, adamant that he is going to play whenever he can play, I mean what are you going to do, right? Like that's where the competitor in him you know, probably wins out. But I think, if he gets hurt again, what's that going to do to all these gainfully employed people?
Yeah, I don't know when you've seen a quarterback play two games in a season and then you just decide, you know, hey, he's got a foot issue and a toe issue, and we're just going to go ahead and shut this down for the rest.
I mean, there's plenty of injuries, right, Charles? Like, there's plenty of injuries in this league that are like, you know, like if it was a different situation, this guy probably could have fought through it. He has the injury, right? I mean, that happens all the time. Maybe not. Sure. Maybe not with a franchise QB too often, but it happens.
Right, right. But I mean, I would argue this. Like, if we're in week 17, right? Even I'll even give you 16. Okay, we got two games left. Okay, fine. You know, like we're at the end of the slate. There's nothing to really be gained here at this point. It's 11 games in, man. There's still six games to go. And it's just, I think the realities of what the NFL is now in terms of guys having, you know, jobs in the line, players wanted to maximize what they can. If I'm Ja'Marr Chase, I'm like, please God, get Joe Burrow back out here. And I'm probably saying that to Burrow as well. You know, I'm like, hey man, you're my guy. Like, I'm going to go out there and take hits for the next six games. Let's do it together. You know, let's make this the best we possibly can. And then frankly, I mean, look, I'll say it, like, you know, NFL teams press fans to sign season ticket contracts, right? Like, you know, hey, the Titans build a new stadium. You don't think that there's somebody on the phone going, hey, we fired the head coach you didn't like. Hey, we got this new stadium. Like,
oh, they are.
Yeah, absolutely. Sign up for this season ticket package that's basically going to be like a mortgage payment for you for a number of years. And then all of a sudden you're going to shut down Cam Ward with six games left in a season. You're going to turn to these season ticket holders and go, yeah, we don't feel like we're cheating you. We're just protecting Cam. Like, you know, that's not what you're signing up for. It's you're still plausibly in a business relationship with even your fans. And if Joe Burrow's healthy, you know, fans want to go out there and they want to watch Joe Burrow. They don't want to watch, you know, subpar quarterback play that you know, ends up, you know, ruining the team's chances to win games, you know, down the stretch. So it's not just, I understand sort of what the mindset of this particular executive was inside a franchise. Look, sometimes I don't consider, you know, this is, and a point that he made, he said, this is it. This is what you sign up for as a quarterback. If it's a lost season, you still show up. You still meet the bell. You know, you're there. And it's what it's about. That's why you're the guy. That's why you're the centerpiece. You're treated the way that you are.
Well, and the other part of this, Charles, is they still play Baltimore twice. Like, they got Baltimore Thursday night, and they got Baltimore again after that. So if you – like, I mean, if I know it sounds crazy now that it's a 3-8 football team, but if you win both of those games – the complexion of the division changes at that point.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I remember Carolina. What was wasn't that long ago? The Carolina Panthers made the playoffs with a losing record, right? I think they were, you know, 7-9, and they ended up, you know, winning the division in the NFC South and made the playoffs. So I mean, we're not exactly talking about a juggernaut, you know, division at this point. Every single, you know, team that we look at in the AFC North has some considerable warts. And, you know, even though the Ravens, Vegas immediately jumped back on the Ravens being the team that would take over that division, well, they're past playing the Jets and the Browns and, you know, the Vikings with J.J. McCarthy and, you know, Miami Dolphins. And now they get back to, okay, now you got to deal with Cincinnati, and you know, you've got to deal with Pittsburgh again, and everybody can beat up on each other. And as you said, they got to play Cincinnati twice, so they're going to have to play the Patriots, granted without their rookie left tackle. It's going to get tougher, obviously, for the Ravens at this point. And they don't just play the Bengals twice; they play the Steelers twice. So the division's going to still potentially beat itself up. And if you're the Bengals and you can somehow win out with Joe Burrow, I don't think a 9-8 playoff team is completely implausible.
So on that front, yeah, have some of that, Joe. So on the the Tampa Bay front, so they've just gone through a brutal stretch here of New England at Buffalo and at the Rams, and obviously they lost all those games. They're down to 6-5. Baker Mayfield got hurt. Sounds like it may be better than originally thought. But what do you make of where Tampa Bay sits at this point? After early in the year, Mayfield looked like an MVP candidate, and now they're reeling a little bit through three losses.
Well, I think he's going to be okay. Now it's an AC joint sprain, non-throwing shoulder. He's not ruled out this week against the Cardinals. You know, non-throwing shoulder situations, that's usually a shot. You take it, you go out, and you know, you're it's all pain management at this point. You know, you hope that, hey, this isn't something that gets worse. And again, you know, you always hate talking about a player being a, you know, Bud Kilmer, let's get the needle out and get him on the field, you know, varsity blues situation. Oh, yeah. But it kind of is that for Baker Mayfield. And it matters, you know, for the Buccaneers. It was funny because I probably cursed them. I going into a podcast, I think it was Thursday of last week, I was saying, like, hey, if this team somehow beats the Rams, the rest of their schedule sets up that they could potentially run the table. You know, this is a team that potentially, I thought at that point, you know, could go 7-0 to finish the season, finish 13-4, and maybe get some money on the Buccaneers being the number one seed in the NFC just because of how the schedule sets up. Well, obviously they get killed against the Rams, and the Rams look like the team that they are. But the remainder of the schedule remains the same for them. You're playing the Cardinals, the Saints, the Falcons, the Panthers, the Dolphins, and the Panthers again. I mean, I'll say this about the Panthers. Like, Panthers have been a very solid team, but again, still beatable, particularly you get Chris Godwin, obviously now back in the fold for the Bucs, and, you know, it's a banged-up secondary. But the Bucs can still go, you know, 6-0 the rest of the way. Baker Mayfield's health, you know, obviously hanging in the balance there, but it's still a team that I think could clearly factor in amongst the top couple of seeds in the NFC. The schedule is that poor the rest of the way, but yeah, I mean, this is obviously a huge hit for them. And, you know, I think thankfully for them, it's a situation where it is the non-throwing shoulder, and you can turn it into a pain management situation. But as Robbie said, I mean, there was a point where he was an MVP candidate, and, you know, this kind of changes it. I'll say this too about Baker, because there will always be second guessing in Cleveland about why didn't you stick it out with him. He plays in a manner where he takes hits. You know, he holds the ball at times to make plays where he takes hits. He has a frame and a size to him where he is susceptible to having injuries. And it was one of those deciding factors for Cleveland when they sat there and said, you know, we're going to move on from him, because they had gone through the injury roller coaster with Baker. And I think they were convinced you know, we don't know. We can sign him to a massive contract extension, but we don't know if this is going to be one of these guys where, you know, from one season to the next, he's missing, you know, three, four, five, half a season of games because of the fact that he'll play and absorb punishment, you know, trying to be this sort of gunslinger that he is. And Tampa signed up for it. This is the reality that you're living with now. And now they're going to have to figure out the rest of this schedule and whether or not an 80% Baker Mayfield can get them there.
Okay, I was going to ask you if Dan Campbell stinks as a play caller, but I already know he stinks as a play caller. So let me ask you this. More likely scenario, Detroit Lions win a playoff game or Detroit Lions don't make the playoffs? Got you paused there.
Yeah, well, because, I mean, they're still on the outside looking in right now. That's the crazy thing. I mean, I'm stuck, you know, it's crazy to me that we're here. And frankly, I mean, it was, you know, you watch the game against New York, and it's like Jameis is hitting these passes downfield, but he was like throwing it up. You know, and I'm like, where's the secondary of the Lions? Like, do they not know the ball's in the air at times? Like, it's not like these were precision passes. Like, people are going to look at the box score and Jameis had a really good game. It really wasn't that good. It was like, you know, you had the Lions secondary, whether it was linebackers or, you know, especially the safeties, just were not able to locate a ball that's a pop fly. And you know, the Giants are pulling a rabbit out of a hat as a horrible 2-9 team and beating the Lions at that point. I still think, you know, Detroit pulls it together. And I think it is probably a really scary. I mean, look, they're 7-4. It's a really scary 7-4 team for the rest of the NFC right now. Every NFC team has warts, you know, even as much as I like Seattle throws the one guy, right? Now he catches everything. Jackson Smith and Jacobs catching everything under the sun, but really it feels very much like a team that can't run and it throws to one guy constantly. The Rams are probably more complete than anybody else. But every other team, I mean, you know, Philadelphia is 8-3, but they act like they're 3-8. Like, everything that's going on in Philadelphia is just, you know, a soap opera. I still think Detroit has the ability to be that team. And I think we've talked about this in the past. At the start of December, we're like, man, they look shaky. But then all of a sudden when January rolls around, we're like, okay, they've got it. They're lined up. You know, everything's good. They've got momentum. And then they hit the playoffs and have an ability to streak. And by the way, it's crazy to me, this Jahmyr Gibbs, I didn't know it until I started to see some of the stuff on social media where they're like, hey, Jahmyr Gibbs has 44 touchdowns before the age of 24, and Barry Sanders is the all-time leader before the age of 24 with 47. And Jahmyr Gibbs doesn't turn 24 until March. And I'm like, oh my God, this guy's off to an unbelievable start. Somebody threw up a stat line showing, you know, Barry Sanders, you know, start up until this point in his career compared to Jahmyr Gibbs. Gibbs is pretty close. You know, standards in terms of like rushing yards, I think Gibbs is averaging like 6.1 yards a carry over the total of his career. I mean, good God. And then I saw Herman Moore was talking about, he's comparing the ability of Barry Sanders in a singled up situation. Nobody can tackle him. But he said, he kind of was like, look, I'm not saying it's the same thing. He said, but if you take the wrong angle on this guy, it's over. Like, that's it. It's point blank. Like, if you take the wrong angle, it's done. It's wild that Detroit was able to pull another player like this at the running back spot. So,
yeah, what do you think of that, Joe?
I still think Detroit. What's that? Go ahead.
I think that people should stop comparing Jahmyr Gibbs, who's great, to freaking Barry Sanders, okay?
Sure. No. I don't think it's just, come on, man. It's obviously, you know how it is. Like, any statistical comparison when guys start off a year. I mean, look, people are having the Jackson Smith and Jigba conversation, like, you know, Megatron. And I'm like, yeah. Come on, man.
Sure,
like,
sure.
It's just like, it's stats, right? It all comes down to stats. Two completely different players in different eras. And it's insulting to all of us from Michigan when the people we've watched be unbelievable first ballot Hall of Famers get compared to anybody else. But you got to admit, man, that kid is, good Lord.
He's saving their, they'd be a bad, bad team if they didn't have him.
Oh yeah, there's no doubt. And there's a few guys though that I've watched the game and you see him hit some space and you're like, oh yeah, that's just, That's not there. There's he's gone. Like it's not even close. Like there's no and you know there'll be guys in his proximity, but he's one of the few players in the NFL playing right now where you're like when he gets open and he's in space and someone's trailing by 2 yards, you're like that's more than enough. It's over. They're never going to get him.
Well, Charles, thank you for being with us today. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family, yeah. And we will talk to you next Thursday, my friend.
You as well. Have a happy Thanksgiving. And Sam Darnold, you are trash for calling stuffing trash.
One more time. Nice. Nice.
Send that to Seattle Radio.
There we go. Have some.
See you, man.
Charles Robinson, our guest on the program. We'll react to what Charles had to say coming up next. Robbie and Rexwell, 102.5 The Game. Saturday's college football game of the week. Vanderbilt at Tennessee at 2:30 on 102.5 The Game and 94.9 The Fan. Presented by Twin Peaks Restaurants and Circa Sportsbook Kentucky. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Appreciate Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports for being with us in the last segment there, Joe. So you're shutting Burrow down the rest of the year if you're the Cincinnati Bengals? Is that what we're doing?
Well, I think it's a really interesting conversation. And I understand. I think Burrow insisting on playing, I think that matters. And also, I mean, look, I agree on the fans. Like, if you're a Cincinnati Bengals fan and you've paid all this money, what do you get in return? You're not getting a playoff team. You're not getting a winning season. Are you going to be, hey, let's go out and just have some more fun watching good old Joe Flacco. I mean, look, good for Joe Flacco. He's out there still making plays. But, no, like, I get it from that perspective. But also, when it comes to, you know, the risk-reward of the whole thing, I mean, I feel like if you do send him out there and he does get hurt again, now you are sealing your fate to me, right? It's an interesting debate. Charles says what I would probably say too, which is, yeah, shut him down. And I get that this guy was like, dude, you got to think of other things. It's an interesting situation. But yeah, I guess if I was because of the fans, I probably would. And if he's like, hell no, I'm playing, then I would play him. But I also think that like the whole idea of like Burrow is going to come out, play well and save all our jobs. I find that part of it to be flimsy.
I just think at some point, doesn't he need to stay healthy? Like at some point,
yeah,
don't you have to prove that you can step out on a football field and get through the game? Which he's had a tough time doing the last few years. Like we all know he's a great player. We all know that when he's healthy, he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. But the guy is not healthy very often. I mean, and how much of that is his fault? I have no idea. I mean, sometimes you just have horrible injury luck, okay? And clearly, he has had some offensive line issues throughout his time in Cincinnati. But the bottom line is they're paying that dude an whole lot of money, and he's never available for them.
Right, and usually as you get older, that stuff doesn't get better, and that's where I'd be like, look, I get it, but also, I mean, in 2026, you've got to have a full season of Joe Burrow, so what if you have an injury now that now cuts into his 2026 season? You know, I would play him, especially, and it's fair to like thinking about other guys in the offense and stuff like that. I mean, like there are a lot of people counting on your franchise quarterback. You have a franchise quarterback, a whole bunch of people count on that quarterback for a variety of reasons.
Are you excited to watch the modern day Barry Sanders play on Thursday for the Detroit Lions?
My goodness. Yeah. It's just like, now look, Gibbs is great. I watch Gibbs playing.
He really is. He's a great player.
No, he's a home run. I mean, he's a home run hitter, right? And that, I mean, he's more of a home run hitter than Barry was. I'm trying to think of like how many backs we've seen, like recent backs that are like that guy's gone.
Well, he's like CJ. He's got a CJ in him a little bit.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. I mean, there really aren't that many, right? Like that are that level of like, you know, he's usually the guys with that kind of speed are like the Tyreek Hills of the world.
Henry would hit that a couple of times, right? He'd kind of go out there. Derrick Henry.
Yeah, he's a home run hitter, but Derrick Henry's still like, I mean, it's more likely that he would throw a safety aside and keep rumbling for the touchdown than to actually just like, even if you take a good angle, he's gone.
But Adrian Peterson had a couple like that, a couple of long ones.
Yeah, he was a home run hitter in his early days. But, like, yeah, comparing to Barry, I mean, come on, man. Come on. Don't do it. Don't do it.
I just saw your reaction to it. Like, I didn't have any problem with anything Charles said. But I just saw your reaction to it, and it just kind of felt like you were taking it as an attack on your childhood. So, it's good to see.
Well, look, I just –
well, childhood is probably not the right word. You were 75 years old when Barry Sanders
– I mean, when the Lions drafted him, I think I was 14. So, maybe 15? Maybe 15. Yeah, I mean, look, anybody who saw him play – again, it's criminal that he's not the all-time leading rusher by a long shot. And I blame the Lions for that still. So, but don't worry, your Packers will go out there and beat the crap out of them in a couple of days. And
yeah,
sure they will. You don't think so?
It's Matt LaFleur, man. It's a big game. No, I don't.
Well, yeah, but I mean, the Lions offense is a mess, man. It really is. The thing about the thing I disagree with Charles, and I think the Rams are the best team. I mean, I would pick them to win the NFC this year. But he's talking about the Lions, for example. You know, watch out for the you're not going to run in that form if you don't have a good offensive line. And I think the Lions, prove. I think sometimes the center position is underrated in this league. Obviously, everybody knows it's important, but to me, that's like. They've fallen apart because they've lost their center who plays through throat fractures,
yeah.
You know? And I mean, think about the Titans 10 years ago, they add like a good player from Houston, whatever. Sure. Ben Jones. How important was Ben Jones to the Titans run here? Way underrated in the whole thing. Way underrated. And in this league, when you have a top one or two offensive line, you can do anything. If you all of a sudden go to, and the Titans can relate to this, if you all of a sudden go to, I'd say the Lions are sub-average overall with their offensive line with what's going on. All of a sudden, Jared Goff, he looks again like just a dude. He doesn't look like a great player because he's got happy feet. I mean, offensive line play, it's so hard to get elite offensive line play. It's so easy to become bad up front in this league.
615-737-1025, our phone number. We'll get back into Tennessee and Vanderbilt. Coming up next, take your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning having a coat drive today from 3 to 6 at the Seven Cedars Butcher Block on the Lebanon Square. They'll be collecting new or gently used coats and jackets, and they'll go to Lebanon Needy Family. So today from 3 to 6 at the Seven Cedars Butcher Block on the Lebanon Square. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. This afternoon on Totally Hits 93.3, catch MTSU men's basketball as the Blue Raiders take on McNeese State at 4 o'clock. Coverage also available on the Totally Hits Nashville app and at TotallyHitsNashville.com. Also, MTSU football taking on New Mexico State this Saturday at 2 o'clock. All the action on Totally Hits 93.3, and a big one coming up for the MTSU Blue Raiders. By the way, was pointed out, I think Mike Gorgon put it out there, among others, that Derek Mason coming back next year for year three as MTSU football coach. So we'll get into that a little bit later in the week. Joe, it is Tennessee-Vanderbilt week. We've had a lot of talk on Tennessee and Vanderbilt today. We will have more tomorrow. And the question I threw out there earlier, like trying to put into scope this game for Vanderbilt fans, right? Like, we know what's at stake in the college football playoff. We know if they win it, they're going to need some help to get in. But, like, the possibility of winning a game to get to 10-2, the best team in the history of your program, and taking down your arch rival to potentially punch your ticket to the college football playoff, that's on one hand if you're a Vanderbilt fan. And the other hand, like if Tennessee wins, you have your best season ever, a quarterback that's going to be in the thick of the Heisman conversation, and then you end it by losing to your arch rival and still not having beaten Josh Heupel, if that's the way it plays out. It would still be just an amazing season for Vanderbilt football, regardless of how this game plays out. But I do think from a fan base perspective, Joe, those two pretty different outcomes there on the line on Saturday.
No doubt. And I would add on to it. Someone, Vanderbilt fan texted earlier. I wouldn't know because I got locked out of the text line again, but texted earlier that you read it that, even you lose, you have 9 wins. They've never done that in the regular season since 1915, all this stuff. And you get this amazing bowl. What actually, like if Vanderbilt loses or it possibly if they win, they don't get in the playoff too, but they might be in the Music City Bowl. I mean, all due respect to the Music City Bowl, but like if you're a Vanderbilt football team, you want to travel somewhere, like preferably way warmer than this place in late December for a bowl game. And that might be because the SEC, like the SEC is now with the bowls, it purely, like, they don't even worry really about like pecking order record or anything. It's just like, yep, you can take, you know, you get first pick, you get this pick. And unfortunately for Vanderbilt, like, they just still, they don't have the traveling crew that probably any other SEC school does, right? So that's that could be another consequence of losing this game. Or again, could be if you win too. I also think that a 10-2 Vanderbilt that gets screwed out of the playoff. And again, I say screwed. I mean, like I'm sorry, but like Oklahoma won at Alabama and they won at Tennessee. You didn't, you know, like that's not like looking at the helmets. That's just the reality. I mean, you both lost to Texas. They lost to Ole Miss. You didn't play Ole Miss. If they get left out at 10-2, I could see Sankey being like, you know what? Like, they need to be at a, like, bring guys, yeah, like, you got to get them to Orlando or Tampa. But anyway, that's just one other little, that's a subplot. But yeah, it's just the stakes of this are just gigantic. And they're gigantic for Tennessee too, I think, in particular, as we talked earlier a little bit about, just for Heupel, the feeling around Heupel, to me, very different win or loss here going into the offseason with the fan base.
Yep, totally agree. And, you know, I think you're going to have two motivated teams. Vanderbilt, without question. I think Tennessee answered a lot of questions on Saturday about how motivated they were going to be. I mean, the Florida game very clearly meant something to them. And I said it earlier, man, like the Diego Pavia part of this, Tennessee fans, I'm sure a lot of Tennessee players don't really like him all that much. So that's going to be an interesting subplot to all this, is beyond the stakes of the two teams and the games and all that, but the Pavia factor in all this, I think, is going to make for a pretty intense environment.
No doubt. And I would say this, and you know, there's going to be, look, he does this every game. Alabama went nuts about this.
Yeah.
Every game he does the practicing the kneel down thing. It's just part of his pregame routine, but they lost it at Bama about that. But I would advise him. I mean, no one should advise him anything. He's going to go do whatever the heck he wants. But like early in the game, when you run, maybe get down a little bit, because I just like people want to hit that guy. And I know Tennessee defensive players want to hit that guy. Now, he's the amazing thing, and I do think that some of it is Vanderbilt has definitely put him in harm's way less this year. I think they've done a good job of managing that, but he's healthy. And at this time last year, he was not. He was limping around, you know, and gutting it out, but he's healthy and fast. So it'll be interesting too to see that, like, do they unleash him a little bit more as a runner? In the last three games, it's just been like, hey man, throw it around the yard. And he's had insane numbers, to the point where he's now, like, in our Heisman poll, which is a lot of Heisman voters, you know, he's right there with, you know, Mendoza and Love from Notre Dame. It's a really interesting Heisman race too.
That is going to do it for us today on the program. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. Hope everybody has a wonderful rest of their day. Next Man Up is coming up next. You're listening to 102.5 The Game.